I guess it could be also used for another meeting room if it's needed for.
Yes, absolutely, because it's all movable furniture that would be in there. It's a very flexible room.
Dave, go ahead.
Just another follow-up. The study rooms, did we coordinate with the school on whether or not that would be something that the school could provide perhaps? Or, I mean, it seems like we want to maximize our space, but I don't know, maybe the teens are more interested in being out of the school than.
Yeah, but, well, and it's different hours, and it's harder to access the school after hours. This library has fantastic hours for a library. The other thing is that these study rooms over here, these aren't dedicated for the teens. These are for anybody, and they came more from public comments of, hey, I'd like a place to be able to get three or four people and Skype, either for a class or for something. So these are driven by a lot of other needs, and in other libraries we see these really highly used. So these rooms aren't driven by the teens. It's more having a teen area in the library to hang out.
Yeah, I was thinking more along with like university classes that they might have. I think they use the school a lot, but yeah, maybe that's.
What I saw last night, most of the people all favored the larger designs that we're looking at.
It was universal.
And, yeah, it was unanimous, because, you know, as other members have commented, we don't want to do something that we have to come back and work on again in 5 or 10 years. Yeah. We want to do it now and get it right the first time. And I support this larger proposal, and I'd like where the multi-purpose room is to see what the additional cost would be if we fill that all the way out, because that multi-purpose room gets a lot of use, and it sometimes it can get pretty tight in there. But
right.
But you know, I understand if it's a major additional cost, but I'd like to see it as added alternate anyway.
Okay. Yeah, we can even build that into the concept design as we finalize it.
Okay. Other comments from the council?
Yes. Hey, this is Jim Fish. I'm here. Since I'm not there to see the pictures, pardon me?
I said, go ahead.
Okay, since I'm not there to see the pictures, I have a question that's probably really obvious to everybody else, but does this improvement include increased parking?
It currently does not. No.
Okay, because what's happened with everything else, like PCR and the school, there's so many cars now, everything fills up all the time. And if we encourage more people to use the library, we're going to have more cars.
Yeah, we might have to do some improvements to the back parking lot, because the front is maxed out. Yeah. But some improvements on the back, and staff is already requesting as part of this, and we budgeted for improved lighting okay. back there, but maybe we need to pave that.
But I do like what you're saying, and I think that the 20-year plan is the best plan.
Thanks, Jim. Okay, we're going to open it up to the public. Public comments on the library expansion? Yes.
Got the buzzing on or off?
I think maybe keep the picture.
The buzzing on. Okay.
We're all used to it by now, anyway. It's just background noise. I just wanted to say, as someone who loves libraries, and in particular loves our library, that for starters, this building has been around most of my life. I'm 23. And if we do a 20-year plan, it will still be around when I am twice as old as I am now, which is going to be fun to think about. But I wanted to say that, like, the days of a library being just for books are very long gone. While people still love books, and we have had requests even from teens, like, please expand the collection. We love reading. We love having the actual book in our hands, and we have a lot of younger kids as well who come in and read. People come in and they use the internet to apply for jobs, to search for jobs. They use the internet to conduct business. We have families and groups of kids come in and get a movie to have a movie night together. And it's really a thing that, it's a part of our community that really brings the community together and helps keep it close-knit. And so even if a budget seems like it's going to be large, or it seems like, well, what are we getting for the money? Like, for the money, whatever money you put into it, the community is going to get in benefits 1,000-fold just from being able to use this library and come in and have their needs met in so many different ways.
Thank you. Other comments from the public? We had, what did we have last night, 15 or 20 people?
15 or 20 in the first meeting that we had. There was a good 40 in that one.
But I don't think there was anybody that was not in support of doing this project.
No.
Dale?
Where's Peter?
It's a library, not a movie theater.
Yeah, well, so it wasn't intentional, because we didn't intend to design this as a theater. But by having this operable wall and opening up this space, you put a nice big movie screen right there and a whole bunch of seats right here. Yeah, it was an accident that came out of the meeting with the kids today. So I'm pretty excited about it. Yeah.
Okay, other public comments? Okay, council, one more time. Any follow-up? Okay, I think you've kind of got consensus of what we think we want to see.
Okay, I'll
march
forward.
The next go-round.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you for the presentation. Okay, we're going to move on to our third work session item tonight, and this is a fire department status update. Nancy?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We provided a report for the council as part of your packet. I apologize for how large it got with just the addendums and the additional information. But when I got here about 6 weeks ago now, very obvious to me that there's a lot of challenges happening, not with necessarily within the fire division, but there's a lot of community input and community conversations and everything happening around things within the fire division. And I just thought it was very important for me to get an understanding of where we are with the fire division, what are we working on, how do we move forward, and what are some of our goals as we move forward. So I asked Chief Colvin and Chief Holman to please take a look at the fire division. Tell me, what's our status right now? What are we doing well? Where do we have gaps? Where do we need to go? Help me to understand what's happening and help to make a plan for going forward. So they have completed that. That's the report that you have. I want to just go through and highlight for the council where I see the status of the fire department right now, and most importantly, what are we working on, and how, what do we see in the not too distant future for the fire department? That is it. Okay. Yeah, you did the full. So the first thing that we did, or the division did, is looked at a SWOT analysis. What are our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and our threats within the fire division? And some of our strengths are we have just some outstanding staff and volunteer staff with some really great advanced EMS training, and we respond very well to an EMS situation. We have qualified staff. Do we need more? Yes, we need more, but we have a very strong core group of EMS response. Without a doubt, everybody felt that was our number one strength within our division. We have quality equipment, and the apparatus is very well maintained. Does this mean we might not, that we're not looking at the out years of when we need to replace things? No, but for our response right now, the equipment we have is ready, it's available, and it's well maintained. And we feel that we do have an adequate operating and personnel budget. Could we grow that even more? Every department in the city wishes that they could. But we have an adequate budget right now, but we'll be working through that more in the future. The weaknesses that we have, we do have a fairly young workforce of paid staff, with that, only a few years of experience, there isn't a great opportunity to have a very experienced paid staff. And we have some inexperienced volunteers. We're always, you know, we want to recruit volunteers, and there's a long training process to get everybody up to speed. So we do have somewhat of an inexperienced workforce right now, especially on the firefighting side. And obviously we've been talking, and you've been hearing the struggles that the division has with, we do have a low volunteer membership right now. We have a lack of firefighter and or EMS certification among the responders. So, you know, certification requires training by certified instructors, but there's also a live fire component to that training. It's not readily available here on the island. So one of the things that Chief Colvin is evaluating right now is it possible for us to have that on the island? And if not, what are the costs for sending people out so that they get that live fire training that is necessary? We're evaluating that right now, and that'll be one of the things that we bring forward. We have had a high administrative turnover within the division for a wide variety of reasons, but it's a weakness that we have right now. The opportunities, we do have new leadership. We have a fire chief on board right now that has strong background in EMS, has a wide variety of certifications from, you know, EMT to paramedic to a variety of classes of firefighting certification. And our other staff within the fire division has been able to become instructors in firefighting and EMT classes. We're working on that. So we have new leadership, and we have some additional training that has been able to occur. The additional senior fire captain position also adds an opportunity for internal advancement. And that's important in recruiting and retaining not just the paid staff, but volunteers who may want to become paid staff, and they see now different opportunities. So we think that is a strong opportunity within the department. Another thing that the division is looking at is possibly reinstating the cadet program to increase interest in volunteering with younger folks that are here in the community. So not sure we're going to do that, but it's something that they're exploring, and how successful was it before and what do we need to do. Threats that we have in the fire division right now, there is, you know, low morale. Everybody's heard different conversations around the community, and there's been challenges, and it doesn't make it necessarily the most fun place to be. We want to create a positive atmosphere within the fire division to help improve that morale and provide that support so that that's necessary, and that the morale goes up. We have under-trained staff. May decrease the community trust and increase liability. We had people speaking at the last meeting of, you know, of that very thing, the undertrained staff, and can we really respond to a fire? That is a threat that we're working on right now. You know, we've had some challenges with planning because of the proposed organizational structure changes and just things that have been happening. It's all part of the mix of where we are right now. I wanted to share where we see ourselves in the volunteerism, so you have a sense of not just how are we doing here, but how do we rate compared to other programs nationally. So this was done in regards to the National Association of Firefighting, what's the last one? NAFTA.
Standard.
Yeah, standard. So this shows per 1,000 people, what a national rate of volunteerism is, 6.3 people per 1,000. So we should, you know, 25 people. What this, that's the first two columns are national standards. One from 2011, one from 2015. That's the average. And then the next three is 2015 for Unalaska, 2016, and 2017. You can see we're at 3.3 people per 1,000, where a national average might be 6.3 to 6.7. What that national average doesn't take into consideration is our isolation here. So really, we should be trying to strive for something even greater than that, because as people within the Department of Public Safety tell me all the time, we have to be able to take care of ourselves. We don't have a neighboring community to, you know, ship over some firefighters or EMS people. We have to be able to take care of ourselves. So our pool probably needs to be larger to accommodate that. So we obviously have growth in this area. This is a very busy slide, and I'm sorry about that, but if you just look at it globally, this is paid volunteers by month for the last 5 years. So you can see that things are, you know, they're a little cyclical. You can see June and July, every year they're down a little bit compared to other parts of the year where more people are in town. But over the last 5 years, the really good years, we've averaged 25 to, looks like, you know, 28 people of paid volunteers that are, you know, have responded to fires or EMS. And you can see that the last 2 years, we're obviously down. We're averaging 15 volunteers that have been active each month in 2016-17. So we're 10 people down from the good years. We know we need to address that. You know, I've heard a variety of things in the budget that they don't have enough money, they don't have enough support. But we have been adding funding and trying to look at ways to support the division. You know, we have a new fire engine that came through the CMMP process back in 16. That fire inspection occurred a week before last. We will be having that new pumper here probably January timeframe. We increased the volunteer stipends last in FY17. There hadn't been a raise in the response rate, so they brought forward an increase to the stipends for volunteers. We increased training to bring out additional training instructors when we were at a position where we didn't have that ability in-house. So we put money towards that. We have the new senior fire captain position that was added this past year, and have interviews this week. So they made it into to Unalaska this afternoon. So we are going through interviews for the new senior fire captain position. We've done some increases to travel and training and overtime, you know, tried to focus on recruitment line items to help. We know we need to increase the volunteer training, and we have put some money towards it. We've obviously not had staff to help address that component. We have put money to it, but if you don't have a fire chief to oversee it and push towards it, obviously, we haven't accomplished everything that we need to accomplish. We're still struggling to get there, but we do have a budget, and we just need to be able to implement that budget, and that's where we've had the gap in recent years. So priorities from the fire division, from my perspective, and you know, reports that Chief Colvin provided and that Director Holman and Deputy Chief Shockley provided. But, you know, a priority was to hire a qualified fire chief. We did that. We have a chief. He's only been on board since September. There's a lot that goes into evaluating where we are and where we need to go. But he is on board. He's been working with the fire staff to develop a plan to move the division forward. What's our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats? And what do we need to do to move forward? So the biggest things that we see working on right now, need to evaluate, plan, and implement a comprehensive training program to increase our capacity on both the fire side and the EMS. More on the fire side right now than in EMS, but we need both. We need to develop and implement strategies for the overall recruitment and retention of volunteers. It's working through where's the morale, you know, what are the morale problems and how do we address it in order to make this a positive place that people want to come and volunteer their time. Evaluate our resources. And this is a big one for Chief Colvin right now. You know, we're starting our budget process for FY19 and FY20 in the next 5 years in the CMMP. And I can tell you, I haven't met a fire chief anywhere in my 30-year municipal career that doesn't want more things. You know, I mean, we need more fire trucks. We need more, you know, they live for that. And it's because they see the importance of it. So, you know, Chief Colvin has a big job ahead of him to identify what, you know, we talked about a live fire training component. What are the costs that it's going to take to do that here versus sending people out and working through that? What are the, you know, that supports the training, it supports the backbone of the fire division. So he has to work through how soon, you know, how to implement that. How soon can I get it financially, reasonably, and the construction and all of that. But also, the other thing that I've heard since I've been here is the need for a good place for the volunteers to call their own. And that's something that the chief is evaluating right now. How could we possibly do that? Can we make some changes in the Imacnac station that creates an atmosphere, a positive atmosphere for volunteers to be able to gather around? You build bonds and you build relationships when you interact together. And we know that's an important part of the fire division and supporting volunteers. So he's evaluating those, but he doesn't get to decide, I got to do all of this, because you all have to weigh that against the other $50 million that other departments and the needs of the city. So it has to go through the CMMP process, and we have to weigh all of that. But those are the things that he's looking at right now, and the fire division staff is looking at. What can we do? How do we make this work? You know, he's also looking at the status of our equipment and how much longer, how many more years can we get out of it, and making sure that we're on a good path with that. So I just wanted to share with you that we hear what council and what the community has been saying with the fire division. We want to support the fire division. I think that the division is working very, very hard to try to map out the plan to get us where we all want to go. And I just wanted to acknowledge their work in this, and I just wanted to bring this to the council just in a brief overview to say we're paying attention and we are working on this, and just to let you know. And we value the volunteers immensely. So that's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. Council comments? Dennis?
Yeah, just reading through this report, you've got a big job on the CMMP coming up here. It looks like there's a lot of equipment that just the daily stuff that needs to get replaced that's out of date. So that's like you got your job cut out for you. Thanks.
Dave?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Nancy, Jennifer, Harley. That really a good report. I agree. Your SWOT analysis is spot on. We do have a good budget. We've got good equipment. We need more experienced people, and I think Arlie's working on that. I think that's a positive path forward. One of the things I think that might make a quick difference is that let's streamline our application process for our volunteers. You know, I downloaded the application for Unalaska, and I think it was 13 pages long. I downloaded the one for Woman's Bay Fire Department in Kodiak, and it's 3 pages long. So it's like your volunteer gets this big, thick packet. It's like, well, I'll do that later. That's 13 pages is too much. 3 pages would be great. You know, why do you want to be, you know, what's your background? that's really what you need to know. Are you an axe murderer or not? Okay, great. We want you. We need you. So just a suggestion, but very well done report. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bong?
I agree. I like this report. I think moving forward, this thing will work good, and I appreciate all the efforts that you guys put into it, and I think this is a big step, and I look forward on the future on what you guys are going to present next.
Thank you, Bong. Roger?
Yeah, just point the guy with the axe toward the door that needs broken down there, Dave, and we'll be just fine. But seriously, what jumped out at me on this report was the clubhouse. That's one of those soft things that you can't really quantify, but that just jumped out at me. You know, I used to play hockey with the guys, and we'd hang out before putting our gear on, hang out afterward, and it was just... And gals too, forgive me, that we had some lady hockey players at times. It's not a guy thing, but just the clubhouse, that jumped out at me. I don't want to get buried in the weeds, but that, I think, was a good idea. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Other comments? Before I go to the public.
Jim here.
Jim, go ahead.
Yes, I want to thank Nancy. I want to thank all the staff for putting this together. I was really excited to read this, and I think that... Chief Colvin there makes a good team with the rest of the crew there. So I want to thank all of you for doing this.
Anything else, Jim?
Nope.
Okay. Dave?
I think in the future we need to get cardboard cutouts. And we'll set a cardboard cutout right there on the table for the guy that's on the phone so we can see him. So don't forget Jim. Everybody else who's on the phone.
No end to the attacks on
that. Can we make it a big bobblehead?
Okay. Council bobbleheads. There you go.
Remember, I used to have that John Wayne cutout thing, but I don't know where that went. Somebody took it to the city hall. Okay. Once again, I concur with the council's comments. I think this is a great start, and I think we need follow-up updates, quarterly or something that would just keep us, you know, like we do with public works and things like mm-hmm. that.
I one thing I did fail to mention, Chief Colvin told me today that we do have 4 new applications for volunteers, so it's a great start, and I know lots more work in that effort, but we do have 4 new applicants.
Okay. We'll open up to the public for comments. Don't see any comments. Oh, yes, we have one. Roger.
Well, thank you, Council. I said a pretty big thing last time around. I'm going to keep it brief. I appreciate all the work that's went into this and that kind of thing. I haven't got to talk to Arlie yet and all that, but I've talked to a few of the other volunteers. Yeah, they want this morale thing taken care of and all that, and it looks like we're going in the right direction to address these things. Former chief shaking his head. I've spoke with Bong. He's enjoying what's going on. So anyway, I just didn't want to sit back and say nothing since I really kind of stirred up the pot the last time I was here. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Roger. Other comments from the public? Okay. Oh, you can go next, Salvador.
Hello, everybody. My name's Dimitri, and I have been a resident for the last cover 9 years now, and I've been volunteering for the last 7 years. I am now, for the last 7 years, I've gone through extensive training with the fire department. I'm now a firefighter, a firefighter instructor, paramedic, and just this year as well, promoted to volunteer captain, EMS captain. So I've seen how the department has changed over the last 7 years. And I'm here today to talk in favor of the department separating from the public safety. As the matter currently stands, as if you have seen, we need more volunteers at the fire department. And the large glaring difference this fire department has from the different departments in the lower 48 is that we don't have anybody else nearby. In the lower 48, you have other counties nearby. They have memorandums of understanding. They can request more firefighters to come in. Over here, this is it. Only the people you have on the island is what you're going to get to a fire call. So This means that we need to maintain definitely a large and a large trained volunteer base. And the previous presentation by Ms. Nancy really resonated with me as I was listening to it earlier. And at the moment, I don't think we have enough people, and I don't think the people we do have are not trained to be able to respond to a large-scale emergency or disaster. We just can't do it at the moment. We don't have the manpower, and we don't have the training. So we need more volunteers. And one of the hurdles for that is the application process, as Councillor Gregor mentioned earlier. It's a 10-page document that you have to fill out, and it's pretty grueling. And for people to volunteer, and if they see that, I'm like, I'm trying to volunteer my time, but I have to fill that out, I'm like, forget it. A lot of people just drop it. And the other part that happens too is after they drop it off, we get a lot of people lost in the cracks. The applications don't get looked at, and the people never get called back. And even after they fill out those 10 pages, when they finally turn it in, it takes about 4 to 6 months before they can start working, because that just takes how long the process takes. You want to make sure we don't have any axe murderers, that we make sure, because they're gonna have access to both the fire side and the police side. I mean, and we don't want those people walking around there. So the first thing that we need to do, I think, is to make sure that the application process gets reduced down. If we separate the fire department from the police side, that application paperwork is gonna go down to 5 pages estimated, and it can take about just only a month to get people onboarded and working. A lot of people, by the time they get done with the application, they forget, oh, I forgot to apply to that thing, and they're more likely not gonna be volunteering. And that's just the beginning. After they're finally working and into the system, we still need to train them from either no training to EMT-1, firefighter, EMT-2, and higher. That takes a long time to do. It took me about 4 years to get to an EMT-3 and about 5 years to get to my paramedic level. It's a long process. And we have people moving in and out of the island. So the problem we have is a high turnover rate. We are losing more people than we are gaining. The reason for that is just people just move off the island or stop volunteering altogether. We have other commitments. And so if we can get people onboarded faster, we are able to have a higher recruiting, get more people in faster. Just because the process for application takes forever, and it's people are not likely going to go through that just to volunteer. So, and I think that's one of the reasons why I really feel that the fire department should be separate from the police. And I've done the pros and cons list of that move, and if anybody wants to talk with me further, I'm happy to discuss it. Thank you.
Yeah. Other public comment? Yes, come. Oh, excuse me, I had Salvador next.
That first.
To cover all pretty much all the stuff that I had in mind, so thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to echo a lot of the comments that were said tonight too. There are great points, and I really do appreciate the slide. That was great. One of the things that really popped out to me was the morale, because that's kind of the reason we have a lot of the turnover too. And some of it does come from the department not having a full voice of what their needs actually are and what they really need. Yeah, because you're right, we always want more stuff and we need more stuff, but morale is really important. And when we have a lot of turnover, that's when your volunteers leave. Because when we have a chief and we get a new chief, you do get a lot of volunteers that want to come back, or you get new volunteers that apply. But if we want to prevent a lot of that turnover, we have to fix the morale. Because I've known a lot of people that work there, and I'm not saying, you know, pay is not the issue, but that wasn't exactly the reason why they left that department. And most people love doing this, and the volunteers in the island do care about doing this job, and they love doing this, and some of them do not want to speak about it, or just don't want to, because they just want to help the community and do something fun. They don't want to think about everything else that's going on, and that's part of the reason why our numbers are down and we have some of the issues. Before I'm done, I know at the last meeting I said that I've been to calls where either equipment malfunctioned or wasn't working. That wasn't really an attack to the staff. I know some people took it that way. Really, sometimes the staff have been pulled away from their duties, and that has been a result of that. So the department having control over itself is really important. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments?
Also spoke at the last meeting, and I just want to real quick touch on that morale and retention of volunteers. One of the, and you touched on it already, was the training for volunteers. That's I think for me personally, and for a lot of us, you know, the stipend is one thing, and I don't believe that any of us really does it for the stipend. But when we get a whole batch of new volunteers, like we just got four, keeping them is by training them, because we're volunteering because we want to help the community, and we're really just asking for you to help us help you, right? So I think, so now that the new budget's going to be coming up with the question, I think if you allow for a bigger, I know like you said, we always want more, but allowing for a larger budget for the training of volunteers, whether that is bringing people in, setting up a program here for training, or sending people out. But personally, for myself as a volunteer, that's the most important thing, and that's what could really increase retention. Because when we come to a scene, instead of twiddling our thumbs saying, well, I guess I can roll some hose, we can actually do something, and that makes us feel more proactive in the community. And that's why we want to do it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, hearing no one else, council, you get the last word on this one. Okay, there's Dave.
Yeah, well, you know, as we go through the budget process, one of the things that we could look at is doing a boost to maybe the training budget for a couple of years to ensure that we get our folks trained up quicker, perhaps maybe than if we didn't have more money for either doing more training here or getting them off the island. I know it's kind of hard for volunteers to go out of town for training, but you know, it's good to have as many opportunities as you can to get folks trained up. And you know, it's really an important safety matter that, you know, Arlie's does have a big job, but he's going to have to make some decisions about what happens at scenes of emergency based on the people that he has, and you've got to be very careful that you don't ever overextend yourselves. So yeah, I you know, I'm full support of this going forward here with the SWOT analysis, and I really appreciate the ISO information that you provided, Nancy. Thank you.
Any other comments? I guess my last one would be, I'm kind of intrigued by a space for could be training and volunteers, the volunteer room. I don't know if that's something that could be put on station 2 by the airport or where we could find space, but I think that'd be something that maybe some research should be done.
It's part of what's being analyzed right now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yes, Dale.
I'm going to sound hokey, but I came from a small place to, can't talk, sorry. Small place in the woods down south, and same kind of a deal, but all the volunteers got together and built a hot rod. We sold the hot rod, didn't make anything off of it really, not comparable to, you know, to buy anything like we kind of wanted to, but you talk about a tight group. When that was done, that, excuse me, my throat's really bothering. When that was done, that was a tight fire department for a long time. Just throwing it out there.
Thank you, Dale. Okay, I think that wraps up this one. Let's take 10 minutes and come back at 10 to 8, and then the clinic will be up. got it. I don't need it. Well, I don't know. That's Roger there.
I'll just put it out there in case it goes. Yes.
It's finally one.
So you need space to get in between the aisles and into other meeting rooms and things. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah.
Well, we said it was in the packet.
It was in the packet. Good. I'm afraid to now. I got a cane, but my ego won't let me use it. But I'm around people. My arthritis has just really kicking my butt last year.
You sound like...
And we're still having problems. They got to send out the unit. So if something goes off, don't panic too much, because we got like four alarms going off and we've been silencing them. Mike's been out. He called you this morning. We set it off trying to reset and figure out what sort of
smoke them pan.
Yeah. Well, you could just went on the back side and got on the roof and look, because you just step 2 foot and you're on that roof and you look right in. That's what I've been up on the roof the last 2 days. We got a leak. And as I've been up I was up there, yeah, and I went and bought a bucket of tar, because you can put it on there in the wet, so I tried to dry as much, get the mud out of the way, and kick it on there, and then I got it down to the drip, so then today I went and put another half a gallon on there, I'm going to have to call a roofing person. I had black all over me earlier, I got it off. I learned how to work and roll my sleeves and step back. Yeah.
I think I will sit here.
Yeah. We're ready. Yeah, it should be. I'm pretty loud anyway.
Okay,
so.
Awesome. Thank you.
That's the wrong one. Yeah.
We're going to address the fourth item on our work session tonight, and that is the IFHS clinic funding request. And that's ordinance 2017-14. Nancy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have been, the city staff has been meeting with the clinic staff on a weekly basis for the last month, just every week talking about where are we financially, what's your current status, what have you found, all of those good things, and you know what's the current state of the need. So this evening I will start just with having the clinic director James Ketch just provide us with here's where we are now, here's the latest snapshot of the clinic and what our needs are.
All right,
James, you're up, and I appreciate the nice slides that were provided. Thank you.
Wonderful. Hopefully you were able to see the great progress we've made. Again, I got here August 15th, and when I first had my first board meeting, we were looking over a $700,000 loss. And over, again, since 2000, they've lost every year, besides the one. So I've been really working really hard. One of my first goals was to get a CFO actually here. So I had somebody that I could turn to daily. What about this? What about that? I'm really excited that Darlene's here. But what I'm really proud of is currently our, as you'll see as we go through, our reevaluation of our cash needs, we've really took a really big bite out of the request. Again, I want you to remember the $500,000 is a safety net. I do not want it as, here's $500,000, go have fun. It's, again, set aside for only at the need. And we have to make sure that we meet the need to the city's goals and guidelines that we set. So keep that in mind. But we're looking currently, running year to date, we're running almost $500,000 below our revenue. That's, again, we have sliding fee scale and our volume has dropped. And our volume's dropped because of our pricing. Our pricing, it's cheaper to go to Anchorage, go do your Costco shopping, go do whatever, see the providers, get your pharmacy, get your prescriptions, and come back, and it's less than what we have at the clinic, and I know that. So we're losing about $500,000 there. We cashed in $200,000 on my second, third pay period here to be able to make payroll. And again, that's coming here. I knew we were struggling, but again, that was a little faster than what I expected. But we did get awarded an additional $190,000. That was in an Ames grant and a HRSA carryover. We had some money that was earmarked to pay some bills. They didn't get them paid on time. And instead of losing that, HRSA let us carry that over. So that's that federal grant. We did make some adjustments in staffing and salaries. We had some people that left. That was really a good timing because I was going to restructure to make our money go the best bang for the buck. But we also brought in a CFO. So we had a little increase in salaries when it was all said and done. But in the long, we had some lower in professional fees, and so it kind of balances out. But we reduced all expenses by $77,000. And that, again, contract negotiations, professional fees, and so forth. So we reduced the money there. We had our, since June over at the clinic, our HVAC system's been down. And so as they were repairing it, the fan blew up. And again, it was the quote from Long's was $25,000. But we reached out and Resolve stood up and helped us out. And they're going to replace it for $5,500 for us. So, and then bills from other that wasn't paid in the last year that we found as we're, the new CFO was here, myself, we're going through cleaning up, trying to see, getting collection letters and so forth. So we found $116,000 that was never booked and was past due. The big thing here is that I want you guys to keep in mind with this ask is this is built in here. Here on the island, there is no pharmacy. So a lot of people don't understand, well, when you come to the clinic and you get a prescription, we try to only fill a 3-day so we can do a mail-in. We are not a pharmacy. We don't have a pharmacy. We cannot bill insurance because it's a dispensary. So people don't understand. I have insurance. Why can't you bill? We can't because that's how the rules are. We're not a pharmacy. So I've been looking into how in the world can we get a pharmacy here on island? Because again, for the boats that come in, again, sometimes they have to get their prescription because they're back out. They don't have time for a mail order or so forth. So anyway, I'm looking at how do we set up a pharmacy? And again, as the city knows, and from the, it made me feel a little better that I hear that other people are having the recruitment problems and retention. So anyway, so we're looking at a telepharmacy, and just to set it up, it takes about 3 months. We're working with Cardinal and it's about $55,000. So again, that's to set up, so we'll have a pharmacy on island. So if you get a prescription in Anchorage, your provider, you could bring a prescription, they can send it to us and we can fill it just like Rite Aid or Safeway. So that's my goal, is to have a regular outpatient pharmacy on the island. So that's $55,000. Next is, you guys will be happy to hear, again, I told the story on my way here to interview, I heard that people love the clinic, but they really were dissatisfied with our billing. We're switching billing companies. We're going with a billing company called Synergy. All they do is rural healthcare clinics, FQHCs. They will be the first one in Alaska, but they're in 23 states, and that's all they do. That's all they specialize in, is what we do. So it's really exciting. And they gave us a really good rate for us to be the first ones here in Alaska, but it's gonna cost a little more to get them on. And that's starting January 1st, just so you know. So again, I know you're getting crazy bills still today. I'm trying to work with them, but we're working on that. So when we originally came, we had over a $700,000 loss. Currently, with adding the pharmacy, we're looking at about $270,000. That's as it is now. But we're doing some things, and that's why I want to have that safety net, and we'll talk about that. So our cash projection for the remainder of the year, this just kind of really breaks it down to expense and our total revenue and our carryover from month to month, because you want money, but you got $380,000 in the bank. That's, again, the expenses, you got to see the total expenses every month. It's quite expensive to have it open.